Sleeping alone and sweeping the streets I used to own. Chris Martin of Coldplay. Welcome, everyone. You're listening to This Week in Accountable Care on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Greg Masters. It's Wednesday, February 15th, 2012, and we're originating this broadcast from San Diego, California. This is the third and perhaps final series in the Health Information Management Services Society, also known as HIMSS, 2012 Countdown Series. Today, my special guest is a friend of the show, making his third or perhaps fourth appearance, the talented, ever thoughtful Vince Caritas, also known on Twitter as @VinceCaritas. That's VinceCaritis. Welcome back, Vince.
Hey, Greg, thank you. It's really an honor to be back again, and we'll have some fun, and we'll talk about some interesting things.
Glad to have your insights and your steady hand in this conversation, and I do mean that in earnest. So let me talk about Vince. Vince is a JD and MBA. He's the principal and founder of Better Health Technologies, LLC, and the publisher of the popular and rather informative e-care management blog. Now, that's e-caremanagement.com. Vince consults to companies in developing strategy, partnerships, and business models for chronic disease management and e-health applications. Clients include both established organizations and early-stage companies, the likes of which include Intel Digital Health Group, Philips Electronics, Amedisys, Ascension Health System, Samsung, Siemens Medical. Vince, I thought we'd start off today with some quick context on you, the health information industry at large, and the subset of that conversation you'll engage at the e-collaboration forum titled The Future of Platforms in Healthcare with Shahid Shah, who's CEO of Net Perspective, and that's on Thursday, February 23rd, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., with a reception scheduled for those who are actually registering for the event. But first, a few thoughts. The broader HIM stakeholder community has been well-treated since the passage of ARRA and the high-tech provisions and the opening of the floodgates to connect healthcare silos that we find in our midst. As we look to HIMSS 2012, a big, large industry event, let me ask you up front, are you hopeful and how are you going into this?
Very, very hopeful, very optimistic. The feedback that we have been receiving and the visibility, even in the last couple of days, I think that before the half hour ends, I'd like to put on the radar screen and maybe talk about a couple of recent announcements. Yesterday's announcement of the acquisition of Navinet by two Blues plans in Pennsylvania, or three Blues plans in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and a company called Lumeris. And today's announcement of Greenway Medical Records that went through an IPO last week and announced today that it's opening up an API or an application programming interface to its EHR, effectively turning it into a platform. But I think, as we talked earlier, Greg, I'd like to start our conversation on a little bit of a different note and start with a story that I hope will engage you and the other listeners on a much more personal level.
Great.
Okay. So help me if I need to fill in any details here. The story, it's a true story. This happened in 2008, and it's a story about Dorothy Tillman. And the punchline is Dorothy wanted her aunt's medical information so badly that she was ultimately arrested for it. Let me set the scene for you. Dorothy Tillman is a African-American woman, and she was in a hospital in the South and took in on a Saturday evening her aunt, Mabel, who was experiencing pains that were unexplained. She took her to the emergency room. They spent the entire evening there, and as Dorothy explains the story, didn't receive much treatment. And the next morning, again, she went in on Saturday evening, and it's now Sunday morning, and she's getting ready to leave, and she says, "I want to take my aunt to another hospital for treatment. Can I have my medical records, her medical records, please?" And the people at the registration desk say, "No, we're sorry, we can't do that." And at this point, she's tired, she's frustrated. For those of you who are captivated by this story, as I've been, there's actually on YouTube a video of her in the emergency room waiting room, but it escalates, and she's tired, and she says, "You know, I got to have my aunt's medical records. You know, I spent the last 12 hours here giving my aunt's medical records," and her aunt joins her. They call out security. The security guard pins her, threatens to taser her, and ultimately she is arrested for criminal trespassing and is booked in the county jail, released later on $300 bond, and the hospital issues a story or a press release later on saying that the proper method for requesting a copy of medical records is to put it into writing, you know, which is pretty much the way that HIPAA requires that you put it into writing, and you know, we'll give you a copy 30 days later in paper. So you kind of get the flavor of the story here, and I want to draw out a couple of lessons. I want to make sure I haven't missed any of the headlines. You get the flavor of what happened here. Dorothy demands her aunt's medical records and is ultimately arrested for criminal trespassing when she can't get that fulfilled. Make sense?
I think that that stages this conversation rather well, and I'm actually searching for it on YouTube right now. So keep going, and if I can find it, I'll tweet out the link.
So I've told this story a number of times, and you know, having shared it with a number of folks, and I'm assuming most of our audience is healthcare executives or clinicians or people who are working in healthcare technology. You know, there are two kind of general takeaways that I think people can resonate with. One is, if you put on your consumer hat, your patient hat, you know, I think we all recognize the intuitive reasonableness of wanting and understanding the importance of having a copy of your medical records after having spent 12 hours in the ER and saying, "I want to take my aunt somewhere else." And implicitly, you know, I don't want them to have to start all over. I want them to get all the tests and anything you've done here. That it's very reasonable. It's something that we would all want to do. And given the kinds of service that we get from many other institutions in America, you know, I think there's a lot of empathy that I get with Dorothy's request. The second takeaway, and you have to be someone who works in healthcare to grok this, and if you don't work in healthcare, you probably won't be able to grok it, is, you know, when this story occurred back in 2008 and even today, there's probably not a hospital in America that would have been able to have complied with that request, as reasonable as it sounds. And why? Well, the department records are scattered throughout the organization, and we haven't put them together yet. And we haven't copied them. And the doctors haven't signed off on all of the reports. And we're not required by HIPAA to give that to you for 30 days. And you are required under HIPAA policy and under hospital policy to request that in writing, and then we'll get back to you. So you follow me on those two points. One is sort of the intuitive reasonableness of the request from a customer perspective. And then if you work in healthcare, the empathetic understanding that there's probably not a healthcare organization in America that has the ability to reply and meet that sort of request. Make sense?
Totally. Totally makes sense.
Okay. So I thought you would connect with that. And, you know, I think what it sets the stage for is, you know, the recognition and to bring this maybe to more of the technical content for the session today, you know, we don't have a collaborative healthcare system, and that we will really need an entirely different architecture, and more specifically a health information architecture. And that goes beyond speaking of health information as a technology. I mean, we're moving away from paper, but we also have to move beyond the closed systems that are existing in most healthcare organizations and move towards a much more open model where, to think of other consumer technologies, healthcare becomes much more like what you see in the smartphone industry, where you have a platform, you have applications that are put together collaboratively with outside vendors, and that's where the API that I referenced earlier, the application programming interface, becomes the technical specifications between how a third party actually connects up with a technical platform. And the need to be able to share information initially and ultimately workflow across different healthcare providers, where Dorothy's request would have been met with an answer of, yes, here's your information, and tell us where you're going, and we'll forward a copy of the record or a summary, at least a summary of the record, to the next hospital or the next set of doctors that you're planning to go to. We've got quite a long ways to go in getting there, but I think we're also seeing incredible progress in the industry in initially simply the mindset change that goes along with that architectural change from moving from closed systems to at least partially open platforms.
Okay, so you can identify and empathize with the request. You've somewhat profiled, you know, the rationale for the institution's resistance or methodology by which they deliver that. Let's talk about that intersection. Let's talk about the enabling technology. Let's talk about what's changed that might bridge those two extremes.
Well, so let me pull in the real world examples, and you know, I would love to hear your thoughts as well too, because I think there hasn't even been much commentary. The one that was announced yesterday, and I'll offer my own two cents. I know people at Navinet, and I've personally worked and known a lot of people at different Blues plans. You know, so I think I can frame this reasonably well. So the announcement was yesterday that Lumeris and three Blues plans, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Horizon in New Jersey, Independence Blue Cross in the eastern Pennsylvania area, and then the Highmark plan, which covers central and western Pennsylvania, have agreed to purchase Navinet. My sense is that most folks probably, you know, have an understanding of the Blues plans, and that in this deal, that it won't register necessarily as to who Navinet is and who Lumeris is. And so let me take a minute to explain that and why I think this is so significant. The Navinet is a company that has been around since 1998, and they're not very visible in the healthcare world because they're really a back office claims administration company. And if you went to their website today, you actually might have kind of a hard time discerning that, because they have been very foresightful in advancing their technology, which has been used. Think of it as a network where three-quarters of the healthcare's of the country's doctors are connected through the administrative claims transaction network that Navinet has put together, and virtually all of the insurers, and they shuffle back and forth administrative information, claim submissions, authorization requests, necessary stuff, but also not particularly sexy and exciting stuff. And what they figured out is that that network is valuable in way beyond shuffling simply administrative information. It can be used to shuffle back and forth virtually any kind of information, including care plan coordination of patients, any kind of collaboration that needs to occur between doctors, health plans, patients, and hospitals. Lumeris is a company that is probably also not on people's radar screens, but they ought to be. And why? Well, they have some really important, significant names behind them. Probably the biggest of which people might recognize is John Doerr of Kleiner Perkins, one of the preeminent Silicon Valley venture capitalists. And I have a hard time piecing together the exact amount, but from their press releases, their parent company raised $60 million last year, and this year they raised another $70 million through another financing. And what they are putting together is a suite of accountable care tools. Think of it as a collaboration platform. And in the early press release, they used terminology which I particularly liked, being from the state of Idaho. They called it Tackle Box, and they described it as 22 different capabilities that you would need to be able to provide accountable care. You can pick and choose from the Tackle Box, and whether you are a health plan or whether you are a hospital, that's who we're trying to sell to. So it's a unique combination of these three players, where you bring together what the Blues bring to the table is 11 million patients, and notably that the Blues plans typically have a much larger market presence in a local market than might a national like an Aetna or a United Healthcare. And so they've got, the ability to get the attention of local doctors. Think of it this way. If you are in a city and Aetna is 5% of your practice, and Aetna offers you this sort of a platform with 22 capabilities, if it's 5% of your patients, you may say, no, thank you, that's too much of an interruption to my workflow. But if it's a Blues plan and it's 50% of a doctor's patients, effectively, you've got to pay attention and participate in this platform. So, the takeaways here are, I think what we're seeing is the payer community really advancing the concepts of accountable care and putting together the necessary type of infrastructure, with Lumeris bringing the technological platform and the applications, and with Navinet bringing the doctor connectivity network and the ability to share that information over the Navinet existing communications network. Let me stop there. Again, I've kind of been rambling for a few minutes there. Does that make sense? Or any questions, follow-up questions you may have?
No, totally. I talk about putting meat on the bone. In fact, I've tweeted out both Navinet and Lumeris. And I've heard Michael Long, by the way, John Doerr reminds me of when you talk about the predecessor work of John Doerr's investment in the healthcare space, you've got to talk about Healthion, which was the precursor to eventually WebMD, and then Amidon. I don't know if I ever pronounced that correctly, but
MDON.
Also in,
I think you're thinking MDON.
Yeah, MDON. So also, you know, in the executive leadership over at Lumeris, you've got Michael Long, Chairman, Chief Executive Officer, formerly CEO and later Chairman of Healthion WebMD. So we got some deep roots. They have deep roots in Medicare Advantage contracting. They know about infrastructure and they know about provider contracting. It just makes enormous sense. So, yeah, you're putting meat on the bone, Vince. Keep going.
Okay. Well, then let's talk this about the deal that was announced or the press release that was announced this morning and why it's significant, again, in moving the world away from closed IT architecture towards at least partially open and you know, eventually, I think, quite open platform application architectures. Greenway announced that it is developing an open application programming interface. Greenway is one of the large health IT vendors, particularly or EHR vendors, particularly in the ambulatory marketplace. They sell a lot to doctor offices. And let me give you an analogy of the significance of that. And to understand it fully, you really have to look outside of healthcare and the kinds of strategic technological decisions and business decisions that have been made by a number of other companies to really see where they're going with this. The one that I think people probably have the most familiarity with is the decision that Apple made back in 2007 to open up their iPhone and their iOS to outside developers. And the thinking that goes on there is we recognize, even though we're Apple, that we don't have all the skills, the resources, the talent to be able to develop functionality and capabilities that might be able to work on our iPhone. And while it is, and you know, while we have complete control over the platform because it's ours, you know, we understand that we have to open it up to allow third parties to be able to connect to and program to our platform, and that will allow for innovations way beyond anything that we've ever thought about. So 6 days after Apple announced or after Apple posted the software specifications for their software developer kit, there had been 100,000 downloads. And, you know, I don't know how closely everyone's been following Apple, but, you know, we've been amazed at the number of applications. You know, first there were 5,000, 35,000, 75,000, and now the number is somewhere north of 500,000 applications that have been developed. What the lesson is for healthcare is you have to open up the API and to turn your technology into something that you will allow others to build upon, and that's not been the mindset in healthcare. It's been really just the opposite of that. It's been, you know, we need to control our technology, not allow anything else. You know, if any code is going to be written, it's going to be written by us, and we're going to have complete control over it. And, you know, that's where the breakdown is occurring. It's a really big inflection point in the strategic thinking and in the technological architecture. And it's worth noting, and it's worth observing how much this opening up of the API has become a part of business strategy for the largest technology companies in the world. Others, Amazon, Google, Facebook, have all opened up their APIs, and you read about the thought process that went on at Facebook, for example. You know, a very similar process of, you know, reflection of, you know, gee, we are giving up something because There are probably things that we would like to develop, but there are many unforeseen new applications that will be developed, and overall, it grows the business ecosystem far better than we could do on our own. So if you've been tracking my thinking, this is really the direction for the e-collaboration forum for next week, our event at HIMSS. It will be taking place on Thursday the 23rd, all day. You can find out more about the event at collaborativehc.org. That's the Collaborative Health Consortium, and I'm a board member. We're an organization that is co-sponsoring this event with HIMSS. And it's been an honor. It's been a challenge. I think we're the first organization HIMSS has ever worked with in co-sponsoring an outside event. And we've got an incredible lineup of folks. Again, the website is collaborativehc.org. If you are attending HIMSS, you can attend this all-day event for no additional charge. You do have to sign up for it, and you can do that by simply going back to your registration for HIMSS and adding that event. And if you're not attending HIMSS and don't want to deal with the slots and the congestion and the hubbub of Las Vegas, you can sit in the comfort of your home and partake through a webinar. And again, at collaborativehc.org, you'll see the information on where to sign up. Let me take a breath, Greg, and point me. I know we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I know we've covered a lot of ground here, but help me wrap it up.
Well, powerful. These are awesome examples. If there's anything that fills in the details, putting meat on the bone, if you will, of how far we've come and the dynamics in the marketplace and somewhat the forward thinkers, the thought leaders here in terms of re-engineering this future of accountable care. This is all in service of accountable care, and it's connecting the dots in a siloed environment. Wow, this is powerful stuff. I'm trying to find – I did post a Greenway link to the PR, but it had something to do with the IPO. So I'm going to reclaim the Greenway site and post that open API notice, because that is powerful. That is really powerful on the heels of them just going public. You know,
it is, and so, I want to point it out, but it's also not the first one that has done this. But I think in terms of the timing of HIMSS and today, it's one that I'm singling out as one to take a look at. You know, I know we've only got a couple of minutes left. Let me at least make sure I wrap up the Dorothy story here. So a year later, Dorothy was vindicated. The charges against her were dropped. The inference that I made is that she, in turn, filed some sort of a lawsuit against the hospital and that they reached some sort of a settlement, although the newspaper is not exactly clear on what that is, but the criminal charges were dropped. So, you know, Dorothy is my heroine. And, you know, I think outrageous as she may have been, you know, we can relate to her needs and her interest to help out her aunt and get the medical information, and how difficult it is for the hospitals to be able to comply with that, and you know how we need to move fundamentally towards a radically different system of health information architecture, and we can talk some more about that next week at the e-collaboration forum.
Couldn't have said it any better. So we're winding down the live portion of the program. We'll be broadcasting next week from Las Vegas at HIMSS 12. Please join us then. And for those of you who can stay with us in after hours, we'll be right back. So we're back with Vince Caritas on our HIMSS 2012 countdown. We're talking about HIT, accountable care, platforms, you name it, the whole enchilada. That's really good stuff, Vince. I'm excited by hearing these representations about the indicia of progress, if you will. And having been at this, as you know, we've been at this sort of cost conundrum and how to solve it question for quite some years, actually decades. I'm thrilled. I contrary to some of the ideological driven, purity driven think tanks who are referring pejoratively to the law as Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act has put a lot of very positive things in place. And prior to that, obviously, era with the high-tech portion, essentially enabling the proliferation of electronic health records adoption, it's done enormous. So we've come so far, yet there's so much more to do. Because if you put up a sort of score, a score sheet, and looked at, okay, here's American healthcare, all healthcare is local, you've got super sophistication in this market, you've got a bunch of laggers here, on average, there's still quite a bit of way to go, yet there's all sorts of enabling initiatives out there that are bringing this forward. So I'm excited, and I appreciate the two examples you've brought up so far.
Well, likewise, Greg, working as a consultant, really tried to avoid politicizing my work. And, I do acknowledge that I describe myself as it's almost impossible, not to bring a political perspective to the world these days. I acknowledge myself as a centrist Democrat. I voted for Obama, but at this point I'm undecided as to where my vote's going to go in the future, and contrast that with whether you're for or against Obamacare. What I hear consistently in the marketplace is and see that I don't think is really being covered is that the dramatic changes that are occurring in the marketplace, many of which I see particularly on the health insurance side, and may not be yet visible because the big effects don't kick in until 2013, 2014. But what I hear consistently is healthcare executives working on the assumption that the principles of the law and the specifics of the ACA are going to be continuing, and at the same time understanding that there's a lot of uncertainty around this, that it could all change based upon a political election, it could all change based upon a Supreme Court consideration of the severability of the insurance mandate, but folks are going ahead and implementing. And particularly in the health insurance world, what I see is, and this is maybe where you and I have done some sparring, back and forth. I don't want to be judgmental, but it's no secret that I think that health plans, have been demonized over the past decade, and perhaps characterized by the movie John Q of denying care, and I view that not as in any way, health plan executives are evil. I look at that as, the rules of the game for health plans have not been consistent with public policy. Public policy being, we want people to be able to have health insurance regardless of pre-existing conditions and not to be able to be bumped off of their health plan with when they get sick. And one of the main changes in the Accountable Care Act is really changing the rules of the game and changing the model for health plans. And I see them, and I think if you don't necessarily see them down in the trenches, you can certainly see the hundreds of millions, the billions of dollars they're throwing at acquisitions and initiatives to advance this notion that I know you and I believe in of, you know, accountable care, somebody coordinating the system as opposed to a bunch of healthcare silos. So, you know, to react to your point, I would agree. A lot of change is going on, very positive things, not at all guaranteed, but I'm optimistic.
As well you should be, as am I. And yes, health plans have been demonized, and your perspective there, particularly in light of the New York Times op-ed, was rather well stated. So let me try and just sum up here. I mean, this is about preparing for the future. Platforms are not optional at this point. If you're risk averse, this is not a time to be a senior manager in the healthcare space, let alone informatics. And if it's about creating value and unlocking forward benefit, this is the place to be. So identify where in this continuum, this broad mix of activity that you can actually contribute, and stake a claim, because there is so much to do. And the thing I like about HIMSS, and I'm a relative HIMSS newbie because I've only been involved in HIMSS in the last couple of years, went to Orlando last year, and all I could come away with is just this palpable vibe. And it reminds me back in the days, it was the precursor organization to AHIP. It was called the Group Health Association of America. And I was watching the Group Health Association of America gain traction in primarily the medical group community as HMOs were being introduced to the world. And each year you could see conference attendance growing. And you had this sense of, wow, there's really something happening here. You know, and so it kind of came to its crescendo here with John Q and perhaps As Good As It Gets, where HMOs were getting slammed left and right. But at that point, they had completely moved away with the principle of an HMO, community-based organization, coordinated, integrated care, and they'd gone into essentially corporate entities that had given away any kind of controls that might be necessary to actually manage care. So my sense is we're at this palpable moment with HIMSS taking a leadership role, because technology is in the front end here of engineering or enabling this change. And I love what you're doing, especially in the open theater to make connections that heretofore just weren't possible because of essentially sort of proprietary bias.
Well, I'll reflect back, you know, my appreciation of your insight and leadership in developing the ACO Watch and, you know, following this whole issue of accountable care and putting a stake in the ground that this is really important, you know, far ahead of where others were still, you know, thinking about whether or not we want to do this. And I think the mainstream is still in that mindset. So kudos back to you, Greg.
Okay, well, Vince, mutual love barrier. Thank you.
A virtual hug fest.
Yeah, so it was news to me that if you're a registered HIMSS participant, you can access the eCollab forum without an additional fee.
We've got a limited number of seats. There are 400 seats available, and at this point we've got something like 325 of those spoken for, so, you know, we are anticipating a sellout, a first-time event. And I think, you know, maybe just to share a few perspectives, that there was hesitation on both organizations' parts in working with each other. The organization that I'm a board member of, the Collaborative Health Consortium, is a diverse group of stakeholders, technology companies, care providers, home health doctors, IPA membership, really all over the place, who are understanding the need to move towards more modular technology. And, you know, we label ourselves as really the disruptive innovators in the marketplace. And, you know, those of you who are familiar with HIMSS, I think they, you know, would be seen as, you know, supporting the mainstream, the incumbents of health IT. And in our conversations with HIMSS leadership, with Pat Wise and with Steve Lieber, I think there was some feeling out that went on, but it was really a good relationship, and they recognize, I think even going back to Dorothy's story of that the usability and the needs and the basic structure of health information technology needs to advance to architecture beyond where it is today. Again, I'm characterizing it as largely closed and proprietary, and saw our organization as bringing together a collection of thought leaders and rabble rousers, representing also real business and clinical perspectives through our membership. And we've worked hard with them to put together this e-collaboration forum event. We will have two heads of ONC there. Dr. Mostashari, Farzad Mostashari, the current head, will be there. And Dr. Rob Kaladner, one of the heads of ENC under the Bush administration, I think philosophically supporting the direction and the need to move towards a different kind of health IT architecture. And then a lot of case studies, a lot of examples from private companies, from not-for-profit organizations, from HIEs. It'll be really an inundation into what people are doing in moving towards this new vision that I would describe as having a lot of impetus, but clearly not yet mainstream. So
that's good.
Thanks for the chance to join you again. Always.
I appreciate your always appreciate your insights, and want to just give a shout out to Leonard Kish and Nate DeNiro for their active support of this particular conference. And so that's going to do it for today. I want to thank my guest Vince Carides for his insights, as always. And we're going to be on site in Las Vegas, broadcasting from HIMSS. We'll be doing periodic broadcasting, perhaps some live streaming. We'll definitely be blogging, as well as a rather generous tweet stream. So the HIMSS hashtag is #HIMSS12, and the e-collaboration forum hashtag is #ECollab12, 2012. So, Vince, thanks again. We're going to say goodbye, and appreciate you all hanging in there today, and we'll see you next week from Las Vegas. Bye now.
See you in Las Vegas. Bye, Greg. Thanks.
Bye.